Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a really fascinating and, for many, a deeply challenging look at the intersection of two sacred texts.
That's right. We're talking about the Bible, specifically the King James Version and the Book of Mormon.
And you send us a stack of sources that zeroes in on a textual challenge that's often called the KJV problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's just unpack this right out of the gate. For many believers, seeing biblical language, you know, woven into the Book of Mormon, isn't a problem at all.
Not at all. They often see it as a harmonious sign, maybe even a fulfillment of prophecy.
Right. The whole stick of Joseph and stick of Judah belonging together. They see it as scriptures confirming each other.
Exactly.
But our mission today for this deep dive is to explore the textual details. We really need to understand why the specific appearance of the KJV's unique phrasing from 1611.
It's known translation errors.
Yes, and its later editions. Why all of that, preserved inside the Book of Mormon, creates these huge problems for the claim that it's an ancient text translated by, you know, the gift and power of God.
And what's so interesting here is how the core claim sets up its own tension. The Book of Mormon is presented as the most correct book on earth, a pure translation.
From plates that are centuries old.
Right. But the KJV text it seems to rely on is, well, by modern scholarly standards, it's an inferior translation. And crucially, it wasn't even written until 1611 AD.
That date is everything.
It is. That temporal gap immediately makes the text anachronistic.
So that's our fundamental issue. Could you just clarify for us, why is that reliance on a 17th century text such a massive red flag for historians?
Well, it's a complete break in the historical chain. I mean, you have these prophets supposedly writing in ancient languages like Hebrew or Reformed Egyptian.
Okay.
And yet when we get their words in English, they are presented with the precise idiom and the specific language choices of 17th century English translators.
It's like finding a Roman scroll written in modern text speak.
That's a great way to put it. It just doesn't compute historically. And we have to talk about the quality issue.
The quality of the KJV itself.
Yeah. The KJV is a beautiful work of literature, and no one denies that, but it's not the most accurate translation we have today, not by a long shot.
Because we have better source texts now.
Exactly. Modern translations like the NIV or NASB are preferred because scholars now have access to earlier, more complete documents. Think about the Dead Sea Scrolls, a monumental discovery that happened long after 1611.
So if the Book of Mormon were a pure divine translation, the question is, why would God use the language of a relatively flawed modern English version?
It's a very pointed question, and it ties directly back to how the translation was supposed to have happened.
The mechanics of it with the seer stone?
Right, the rock in the hat. The witnesses like Martin Harris and David Whitmer were very clear. They said the words appeared exactly on the stone and would not change until they were written down correctly. A very tight translation.
Which creates a paradox, doesn't it?
A critical one.
Mm-hmm.
If we accept that model and the words that appeared match the KJV errors and all, it implies one of two things. Either God deliberately presented the flawed 17th century KJV text, imperfections and all, through the stone, or...
Or Joseph Smith was just using a KJV Bible directly as his base text.
Precisely. And the textual evidence we're about to look at seems to point very strongly in one of those directions.
Let's get into those fingerprints then. These are the unique, known KJV mistakes that really shouldn't have been replicated in a divine translation.
This is where the evidence gets really sharp. A classic example is Isaiah 2.16, which is quoted in the Book of Mormon.
In 2 Nephi 12.16.
Correct. So the King James translators, back in 1611, made two mistakes here that modern scholarship has identified.
Okay, what were they?
First, they mistranslated a Hebrew word for something like beautiful craft or delicate works of art. They translated it into the very peculiar phrase, pleasant pictures.
Pleasant pictures, okay.
Second, they incorrectly translated the preposition against all as upon all. Both are just known errors in the KJV.
So when the Book of Mormon quotes this verse, supposedly from ancient plates, what do we see?
We see the 1611 KJV shining right through. The Book of Mormon text copies both of those errors exactly. It says, upon all pleasant pictures.
Wow.
And modern translations confirm the KJV was wrong on both counts. But here's the real kicker.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. The Book of Mormon not only preserves that unique KJV mistranslation, it also introduces a new incorrect phrase by adding all the ships of the sea.
Wait, so it's adopting the specific error from 1611, and then the translator just tacks on a whole new clause that isn't in the original Hebrew or the KJV.
Exactly. It's really, really difficult to argue that God is transmitting a pure ancient text when the Book of Mormon is cementing a 17th century flaw and then adding to it.
That is a remarkable piece of evidence. It points right back to the KJV as the foundation. Okay, let's move to the next section, because one of the most compelling clues is the issue with italicized words.
Ah, yes, the italics.
For anyone who isn't familiar, these words in italics in the KJV were put there by the 1611 translators. They weren't in the original Greek or Hebrew.
Right. They were added just to make the English flow better grammatically, to supply a deficiency, as they used to say.
And that phrase is important because we have an early church leader, W.W. Phelps, who in 1833 specifically praised the Book of Mormon for being superior to the Bible.
Because it wasn't, and I'm quoting him here, tinctured by the wisdom of man with here and there an italic word to supply deficiency.
He saw the italics as a sign of human error. The irony, though, is that the evidence shows the translator was actually focusing on those very words.
Overwhelmingly so. The scholar David Wright did a statistical analysis on this.
And what did he find?
He found that only about 3.6% of the words in the KJV Isaiah passages are in italics. It's a tiny fraction of the text.
Okay, a very small number.
But, and this is the key, those few italicized words account for somewhere between 22 and 38% of all the words that were changed between the KJV and the Book of Mormon text. Another scholar, Royal Skousen, puts the number at about 29%.
So hold on. A third of all the edits are concentrated on just 3% of the words. The very words the KJV translators admitted they added.
The correlation is just too high to be random. It's statistically impossible if you're translating a pure ancient text from scratch. It shows the translator was hyper-aware of the KJV and was specifically targeting its known weak spots.
And did these edits sometimes create new problems?
They absolutely did. A great example is in Isaiah 51.19. The KJV used the italicized word things. In the Book of Mormon, the word is changed to sons.
Okay, seems like a minor change.
Except it created a new linguistic error. The original Hebrew phrase is grammatically feminine. The word for son is, of course, masculine.
Ah, so by changing the English word, he accidentally broke the grammar of the original Hebrew that he was supposedly translating from.
Precisely. It proves the translator was working entirely within the world of the 1611 English text, not checking it against any ancient source.
This is all Old Testament material. But the problem gets even worse when New Testament passages appear in the Book of Mormon, right?
It does, because now, on top of the translation errors, you have a massive anachronism. This material shouldn't even be there in a pre-Christ or early post-Christ American record.
Let's talk about the law on adultery from Matthew 5.
Okay, so that appears in 3 Nephi 12. Both the KJV and the Book of Mormon use the phrase, "by them of old time."
And what's the problem with that phrase?
It's a double flaw. First, textual critics know that phrase is a late addition to the original manuscript of Matthew. It wasn't in the earliest versions.
So it's an interpolation. Mm-hmm. A scribe added it later.
Correct. It's not original to the gospel. But it gets worse. That late addition is also a mistranslation. It should actually read, "unto them of old time."
So when Jesus supposedly appears to the Nephites to deliver his pure gospel,
he's speaking using a phrase that is both a late addition to the Bible and an incorrect translation of that late addition. It completely undermines the premise of the Book of Mormon being a pure, restored version of the gospel.
It's like a photocopy of a mistake.
That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. And then you have the famous long ending of Mark.
Right, Mark 16.
Almost every single biblical scholar agrees that verses 9 through 20 of Mark 16 were a late addition. They were probably written up to 200 years later to give the gospel a more satisfying conclusion.
And yet,
verses from that not authentic, compiled, edited ending appear nearly identically in the Book of Mormon in Mormon chapter 9.
That's astonishing. So the Book of Mormon isn't just copying the KJV, it's copying the KJV's known textual baggage.
Hmm.
The parts that scholars agree were added by editors centuries after the fact.
It confirms the source material being used was not some ancient, pure record, but the compiled, edited 17th century English Bible that was available to Joseph Smith.
Okay, let's look at the Sermon on the Mount, or the Sermon at the Temple in the Book of Mormon. This is where we see some really selective edits that, well, they seem to reveal a 19th century perspective.
Yes, you can see the translator trying to fix obvious problems, but then missing others that were just as big. For example, in Matthew, Jesus talks about paying the last farthing.
A British coin.
Right. An obvious anachronism. So in 3 Nephi, the author changes farthing to senine, which is a Nephite coin mentioned earlier in the Book of Alma.
That seems like a logical fix to make it internally consistent.
It is, from a 19th century editing perspective. But then, in the very same speech, he leaves another anachronism completely untouched.
Which is?
The line about being compelled to go a mile. This is a direct reference to a Roman law of compulsory service. That whole concept, including the unit of distance, the mile, is kept verbatim in 3 Nephi.
So the Nephite Jesus uses a local Nephite coin, the senine, but then tells his audience to follow a Roman law using a Roman unit of distance, the mile, neither of which would have meant anything in ancient America.
Exactly. It shows a superficial level of editing. The author saw farthing and knew it was a Britishism that broke the immersion. But he didn't realize the Roman legal context and the mile were equally problematic, so he just left them in.
It really reveals a lack of deep historical understanding. So, given this mountain of evidence, what are the apologetic responses? How do faithful scholars try to reconcile this?
Well, the most common response, like from an organization such as Fair Mormon, is essentially to acknowledge the problem but then plead ignorance.
What do you mean?
They'll say something like, yes, the Book of Mormon incorporates text, which are now considered to be mistranslations. But then they conclude with, we do not know the specific mechanism. They admit the errors are there, but then punt on the explanation.
It's a non-answer, really.
It is, but other scholars have tried to propose a mechanism. That's where Royal Skousen's theory comes in.
And his theory is?
Skousen suggests that maybe God supplied the image of the KJV page to Joseph's mind and then gave Joseph the freedom to freely alter the text to make it more understandable for his 19th century audience.
But that runs directly into the biggest contradiction we've talked about.
It runs headfirst into it, the accounts of the Tite translation. If Joseph was free to alter the text, that completely contradicts David Whitmer and Martin Harris, who swore the words appeared exactly and couldn't be changed.
So the witnesses were clear. He was not free to alter it.
Correct. The evidence of heavy editing and KJV flaws really suggests the translation was loose because Joseph was using the KJV and editing it, not because God was giving him a picture and letting him improvise.
At the end of the day, it seems to lead back to the 19th century.
It really does. I think the historian Richard Bushman, who is a faithful believer, put it very honestly when he said, "The theology of the Book of Mormon is very much 19th century theology. And it reads like a 19th century understanding of the Hebrew Bible."
So what does this final implication leave for you, the listener, who brought us these sources?
Mm.
The evidence, the KJV errors, the focus on italics, the late NT editions, the selective editing, it all points overwhelmingly to a 19th century author using the 1611 KJV Bible as a base text.
Mm.
And this goes right back to the Book of Mormon's core value proposition. If this book was meant to be the pure, unadulterated gospel, free from the corruptions of man, why would God's chosen translation method involve importing and cementing the known errors and textual baggage of the King James Bible?
It just doesn't make sense. You can't market a book on its textual purity while simultaneously importing the very impurities the Bible is often criticized for.
It's a fundamental contradiction.
It is. And this study really forces you to look at the source material scientifically. When you do that, you're led back again and again to the environment and the materials that Joseph Smith had right there at his fingertips. So here's a final thought for you to mull over.
Okay.
If a text claims to be a timeless ancient record translated by a miracle, yet it is tethered so precisely to a specific, flawed 17th century English book, what does that imply about its historical claim? It makes you wonder if the Book of Mormon's strongest claim to be the most correct book is actually its deepest vulnerability,